Coming up in this week in computer hardware, can you buy a 1080 GPU? Lenovo drops the first Project Tango phone along with MotoMon. Some promises, Moto Z Force can't be broken. Oh, and is it safe to buy a new CPU yet? All that more coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twitch.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 367, recorded June 9th, 2016. Fab 2 Pro and the unbreakable Moto Z.
This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by iFixit. Introducing the all-new ProTech Toolkit to give you the compact and complete toolkit for all things DIY. For $5 off your purchase of $10 or more, go to ifixit.com/twit and enter the code TWITCH at checkout.
Welcome to Twitch This Week in Computer Hardware. Twitch weekly show that aims to bring you the most useful, most informative, most engaging, and yes, most on-location coverage.
you could say that.
Well, it's kind of strange. I'm Patrick Jordan.
I'm Ryan Shrout.
And we're not normally in the same room.
This is true.
We're both in San Francisco. So neither one of us are home at the moment.
It became a very complex thing as of yesterday. I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be at this Lenovo thing. Are you going to be there? Yes. Oh, cool. I'm already here. I didn't bring any of the electronics I was supposed to bring. I didn't bring headset. I didn't bring microphone. I didn't bring cameras. I didn't do any of that. So I was like, hey, could you figure all this out for me, Patrick?
Oh, sure. So we did, including some really awesome software that virtualizes a stereo output from a Scarlett 2i2
called
VoiceMeter.
We can mix it down.
And there you go. It turns out that Skype will only accept a single channel.
Skype, the left channel. Microphones are generally mono, I guess.
Why?
I don't know.
There's so many more things they can be.
Yeah.
In any case, so Lenovo, you might know them as also owning the sort of Motorola Moto brand of phones. And we had two phone announcements today. Probably the big one, the Fab 2 Pro, the world's first Tango-enabled phone from Lenovo. Big.
6.4-inch screen.
Yeah.
2560 by 1440 resolution. It is enormous.
You have an iPhone 6S.
I do. Not the Plus.
Right.
But the iPhone 6S, and it's...
dwarfed.
Yeah. It's almost comical.
Yes.
Have there been other screens of this
really
size,
big
probably,
phones,
right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good-looking phone. It's a powerful phone. It's, we're looking at like a Snapdragon 820,
yep.
A ton of sensors we've never really seen before. So it will support Tango, and the whole point of that is to support Google's Tango or Project Tango, which is now just Tango, which is basically a whole bunch of additional motion tracking and sensing that allows them to use it as a augmented reality window.
It has a depth sensor. It's got four cameras on. It's got a front-facing or rear-facing or standard. Then it's got a depth-sensing camera and now I can't remember what the fourth one actually was, but it's got four different cameras that all combine into the ability to do. What I found interesting was Intel was here. They were on stage. This is not an Intel-powered phone. It's a Qualcomm-powered phone. But Intel had RealSense. Remember, we looked at there was a Dell tablet that had RealSense, and it had the ability to kind of do depth measurements and stuff. But it was just using stereo cameras and then a whole bunch of math. This doesn't really have any specific stereo camera in it. It uses single cameras that are doing different things.
Yeah. Well, it was funny because they're like, okay, it's $499, unlocked, going to be available September 16th, Best Buy, you know, major partner. And oh, by the way, it's going to be at Lowe's in time for the holiday shopping season.
I'll admit, when I first got the information, it only listed Lowe's. It did not list Best Buy yet. And I thought, well, that this would be I think this is the first time a Lenovo phone is being sold in the U.S., right? And like Lowe's was very confusing me. But when they all the demos they showed, so they're showing a bunch of augmented reality demos, one where there's a dinosaur, like a dinosaur app that you can basically bring up dinosaurs from Velociraptors to Tyrannosaurus Rex, whatever it is, and it'll be in your physical space. You can walk around and interact with it in some ways.
Well, while you're looking at it
through the phone. Yes,
I played that game. It's really awesome.
Is it really?
I really enjoyed it.
Like the aliens invading your room.
The aliens invading your room. But the other thing they do is like, hey, what will this chair from this catalog look like in this space?
Right.
And that was you know, that's kind of something we've seen people playing with on apps on mobile devices for a while. One of my favorite ones, you would take a magazine, you would throw it onto the floor, a standard size magazine, you would throw it on the floor, you would take a picture with that, and then take more pictures around the room, and it would extrapolate the dimensions of the room from the known size of the magazine. Gotcha. So, you know, this is Project Tango is essentially, gosh, if there was a thing that's like $3,500 from Microsoft, this developer kit,
HoloLens.
That's the one. Yeah. So it's like HoloLens without a lens inside your phone, and it's kind of true to the whole sort of Google Android experience, where if we can do it on a phone and make it more affordable for people, we're going to do that.
And it's cool. $499. I did a demo of this at Mobile World Congress, where Lenovo gave us the Tango Project Tango tablets, where you walked around a museum,
right?
And it did a kind of a structured tour through it. And the same idea was going to be applied here, right? And it's $499. It's available in September. I think it's really interesting to look at it from a viewpoint of there hasn't been a whole lot of innovation in phones. This is a very large phone, so it's like, you know, you've got a specific audience that you have to, you know, target with that.
Well, phablets are, you know, it's for people who've been carrying a, you know, 6-inch phone. It's not going to be that much bigger. It is bordering on tablet level, but it's also, you know, it's a tremendous amount of technology, and it's also Lenovo partnering with Google to kind of lead the edge on a pretty big project.
It's impressive. It's a neat device. But that wasn't the only phone they announced.
It's funny. Yeah. Like the Fab 2 phone, which is, you know.
Oh, because this is Fab 2 Pro.
Yeah.
And then they also have a Fab 2.
But the Fab 2 price is at like $199. It's not Project Tango, so it doesn't have all the sophisticated sensors, but the cost is, or the additional cameras, so the cost is a lot lower. But As excited as I get about $199 phones, the big announcement, which was accompanied by Ashton Kutcher, because, you know, Brian and I are always hanging with those hip Hollywood types.
I actually brought him.
Well, you did?
Yeah. I invited him out.
I was wondering where.
And then they integrated him into the show. It was really embarrassing.
I've never seen your entourage before. Well, it's funny. They brought out, like, you know, they had images of like, you know, 15 years of Motorola phones. And then they were like, you know, remember snapping phones shut? And they brought out what eventually evolved into the Moto Z and the Moto Z Force,
right?
5.2 millimeters thin, a little hump for the camera on those. Quote, and for the Moto Z Force, which is their sort of Patrick-proof version of the phone. Quote, added our amazing shadow shield technology. We guarantee the display will not crack or shatter. It's a 5.5-inch Quad HD display, a Snapdragon 820 processor, 4 gigabytes of RAM. Yes! 30 hours of battery. They're claiming the turbo charging will give you 15 hours of phone life from 15 minutes of charging. Some, you know, pretty serious laser focusing and optical image stabilization. Right. Off of the camera. So what looks to be a pretty badass camera inside of that one.
Yep. I think that's did we talk about the mods part of it? That's like really the interesting part. Like, other than the fact that Patrick won't be able to break it, in theory, is on the back of it, there are 16 pins, and it's basically like a connection interface for power and data and audio and video, as it turns out. And much like, if you remember the LG G5... It had like they had to slit out the bottom, right?
Yeah. The battery, you get a pry bar. You would take apart half the phone.
Yeah. This is, you don't have to power the phone on or off when you're removing or adding accessories. It's just magnets snap it into the back of the phone, and then it adds on accessories. And the three that they've announced are a projector that they claim can do a 70-inch screen, but
that's,
I really wouldn't
aggressive.
Know the lumen output.
I'd say 40 inches in a dark room.
Yeah. They have a JBL speaker set, which essentially would turn your, like, a portable
box.
Bluetooth speaker.
So it's got to be less than $100.
Yeah. And they demoed it on stage, but again, it's a huge room, so it's hard to really tell what that.
Well, if that was actually, if what we heard up in the nosebleed seats was coming from the JBL, I was trying to figure out what was going on down there. I was like, that's incredibly loud.
And then the third one was a battery that they claim will give you 22 additional hours of battery life.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, that's what I live for, right? Is battery life on laptops and phones and tablets and whatever the hell else there is.
Also fashion backs.
Yes, of course. Yes, fashion backs as well. So you can get your leopard print or whatever it is you need on the back.
Actually, they were all very subtle and understated.
Were they? Yeah.
Leopard print stuff will come later.
So that's the Moto Z.
The Moto Z and the Moto Z-Force. Z-Force.
Yeah, yeah.
Both of those have the snap-on backs. And the Moto Z-Force, which should be what you're looking at right now, in theory, they're claiming you can't break the screen.
You're right. Those are pretty understated designs, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know. I approve of those.
Especially,
but yeah, there you see the projector on the left and the speaker on the right. They're going to add some thickness to the phone,
right?
But
you can unsnap them if you want your phone thin again.
Yeah, and apparently you don't have to reboot the. You know, hopefully no software crashes if you're listening to Spotify and you suddenly rip out the speaker,
eat that
portion of it or something. But
they tease some kind of laptop, like laptop keyboard, or maybe it was a tablet keyboard.
It was a device on the back of it that introduced. I think it was going to be like wireless, like Wi-Dai, like wireless Wi-Gig or something like that. Placed on a dock
for like 4 seconds at the beginning. I was thinking of that shot that looked like some sort of a glowing keyboard.
Yeah, I don't know what that was. Oh no, and then they had like. The projected keyboard was an option as well.
That's what I thought. Well, the other thing is, they did show the phone like docked in. So the idea that you could snap the phone. Well, that's what they announced is a $1 million contest for developers for Moto Mods. They want people to come up with the cool ideas. And like the idea of the Moto Mod desktop is curious.
If they're not built by Motorola, I don't know how much I'm going to care. Not that if they're awesome, I'll care.
Right.
But like if you look back at
the history of. Stuff like
the Intel Nook, right? Yeah. They had this thing. Oh, you can take the lid off, and you can make your own, and you can do all these cool things, and nothing ever happened with that. And the LG G5, they announced with three, like a camera and a projector and something else.
And they finally started shipping. I'll be curious. You know, at least what they're trying to do is open it up.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and I like the idea of at least, you know, making the spec available so that people can try to make add-ons. Because this is one of the first add-ons on a camera that did make me feel like it was half a Rector set and half,
you know. What else did they show? They showed, like, a very early prototype of a phone that wrapped around your wrist.
Right.
When you have flexible screens. They showed a tablet that you could fold in half and it became a phone.
Well, it was like a snap bracelet.
Yeah, there was one that was like a snap bracelet. It was big. It was bigger. And then they showed a tablet that... folded in half to use as a phone, and you can unfold it. These are not products yet, but instead are things that will.
But Lenovo's trying to say that we're looking at the bleeding edge. We're looking to be hip. We really want to push the form factor. And
it was neat. It was pretty cool. And I'm going to call them out for this. So there's two levels at the Masonic Center at. They have this base level, like the ground floor, and they have this whole section of upstairs, right? And they said, the CEO of Lenovo's on there. He's like, and I've got great news. You love these products. I've got awesome news. Everybody on the lower level, you get to pick if you want the Moto Z or
special friends.
You get to choose if you want a Moto Z or a Fab 2.
Yeah.
And he mentioned nothing about all of the people in the top section of the theater, which is where we were at.
Apparently we're not special friends.
Now, I still think if I ask, I'll get a Fab 2 for review or whatever. That's fine. But I thought it was like... Why would you call it out like that? Like this group, you
because
get
they want
something.
The special friends
the
to
rest
feel special.
Of you guys, thanks for coming. Thanks for traveling out
it's
here.
It's an election year. Somebody's insulting somebody somewhere
it was good.
Every
it was
moment
good.
Of the day. So you are just back.
Yes.
From your triumphant 2-week tour of Asia.
Like
which actually
days,
was like,
close.
Yeah, it's, yeah. You know, but you were, I, you corrected me that you weren't at Computex, but you were seeing a lot of vendors near Computex.
I didn't go to Taiwan. Okay. I didn't go to Computex. I stayed in Macau when I went to Hong Kong for a day too while I was out there. And all I did was really the same thing I would have done at home, except in a different time zone. I sat in front of my laptop and watched press releases and news come out from other places and, you know, We sent requests to like MSI and Asus and I said, hey, send me pictures of your stuff so that we can write up a story and do
so
all
you
that.
Flew 3,000 miles to do this. Why?
Well, I had to go see AMD at Macau.
Thank you.
Right. They had a thing where they announced the RX 480 Polaris graphics card and all that. And then I was like, well, I'm already over here. I'm going to stay. And so, well, you could fly to Taipei. And I was like, then I got to make meetings and I don't want to do all that. So
did we talk to a bunch about the RX 480 last week? You know, do we have a firm ship date for that?
June 29th.
June 29th.
Yeah.
Just in time for my birthday.
Yeah. Yeah. And $199 just in time for your birthday.
So it's like in my price range even.
Yeah.
So in theory, it should spank the 950.
Yeah, it definitely will do that.
Will it spank the 970?
My assumption is that it will be faster than the 970.
For $199.
Your definition of spank will vary from person to person.
Well,
I think it will be somewhere between a 970 and 980. And that's based purely on the performance result, right. the performance numbers they gave, which were only in teraflops, and then my knowledge of how that translates to actual in-game performance through GCN,
which is not a you don't directly compare teraflops between NVIDIA and
AMD.
AMD is going to be sort of a percentage of the teraflops.
Correct.
Right.
And it's just a matter of how much can. You can have this huge teraflop computing thing, but you got to translate that into actual gaming performance at some point. So I think it'll be between a 970 and 980. The 970 currently today sells for about $329, although I think you're going to start to see that drop pretty quickly. So I don't know if NVIDIA's response will be to just drop 980, 970 prices accordingly, or if they'll have the GTX 1060 ready in time to compete.
Well, at this point, so we should probably mention... You know, you may want to check Amazon really quickly, but, as of this morning, outside of a brief spate up at, Newegg, Canada, we haven't seen NVIDIA GTX 1080 or 1070s pretty much for sale anywhere.
They show up, and they're gone in 5 minutes. They show up, and they're gone in 5 minutes. That's pretty much how it goes.
Which is incredibly frustrating.
Yeah.
If you've been thinking about buying a GTX 980, don't. Just wait until you can find a 1070 or a 1080, depending
on
what what your pricing level is, especially if you're looking at VR. There's a GTX 1080 and showing up for $619.99, which is
One left in stock.
Wow, not bad.
$619.99 for a Founders Edition. Wait, for Founders Edition? No, it's $819. Sorry.
Oh,
don't buy that one.
Yeah,
that's $120 over the price it should be.
And the reason it's getting 2 out of a possible 5 stars is because people being pissed off about price gouging. So as we've gotten used to it.
The 1070 should be on sale starting tomorrow.
Okay.
Or today, if you're watching the recording of this.
So for several minutes, it should be available before it sells out again.
I'll be very curious to see how that compares to the 1080 for sure.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
We talked about Intel's 10-core CPU last week, $1,700.
Yep.
Awesome if you're a professional or just have more money. Not necessary for any form of gaming, even 4K, unless you like to do 4K gaming while rendering Blu-ray rips, while compiling code,
Intel invented a term for this. It's called megatasking.
Megatasking.
They had to invent a term because if they're going to charge you $700 more than they should, they need to have good branding behind it. It's a fantastic processor. It's the fastest consumer processor you can buy. But they just had no justification for raising the price from, the Extreme Edition has always been $1,000.
Let's see, you make one. What are you going to charge for it?
Charge way more than $1,700. That's for sure.
This
is what happens when you don't have any competition, right? So,
but the other thing is, look at how the prices, the prices on the 6700 or 6700K were not bad. We're going to talk about this later in the show, but if you are looking for a new CPU, go ahead and start buying, because we don't really expect to see anything new until January.
Cabby Lake looks like it's going to be a January release as well. So
go forth and build PCs. Oh, my goodness. HTC Vive shipping in volume.
Yeah.
Apparently if you want the HTC Vive, which kind of has the better head tracking and, of course, the superior controller situation, at least until, we see what Oculus comes up with when they finally ship their controllers. HTC Vive is shipping in volume right now. Fortunately, you can't buy the 1070 or 1080 that would be ideal for feeding it graphics.
Not yet.
Now available in 24 countries. It's a VentureBeat article on that one. The other thing that was interesting is I've gotten to play around with this one. You guys did a full review on the Corsair Lapdog, which is there. if you didn't see us talk about it at CES, it's basically 4 feet of extruded aluminum with a soft pad on the bottom, and you mount a Corsair, like a K70 keyboard in it, along with, it's got a trackpad and a mousing area. And then there it is, kids. I like it right up to the point where every time I put it on my lap, I remember that if it's centered on my lap so it doesn't fall off my lap, the keyboard is to the left of my spine. It's to the left of center, so I have to... I have to sit staring at it, but my hands have to be over.
If you're trying to type, yes. If you're trying to write something, yes. But if you're trying to game, your body is usually centered somewhere in that 10 key position, right?
Apparently, I game
WASD and mouse. Well, yeah, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. But Alan definitely found that if you're going to type on it, if you're going to write anything, if you're doing any kind of productivity, you do have to kind of shift things. And what he ended up doing was kind of lifting it up. The bottom of it is kind of has a form to it so that. it kind of fits between your legs a little bit, and it's a little bit less mobile. If you kind of lift it up and move it to the side just a little bit so the keyboard is more centered on you, right. you can actually do some work on it. It's a neat little device. There's a lot of, like, the keyboard mounts in it very flush, very cleanly. The mousing surface has edging around it, like little raised metal edging so that your mouse doesn't slide off.
Right.
What it needs still is, so it's wired as well. Right. Just point that out. It comes with a 16-foot USB and power cord, so it goes to your home theater PC. You use it while you're sitting in front of your television. What it does need is maybe a pouch or magnet or something to hold your mouse while you're not using it.
Yeah, so it doesn't fall off the
side. Right, so it's not just kind of dangling off the side of things. And a lot of people obviously want some kind of wireless version of
right.
it. And I don't know, you know, if you're going to power RGB keyboards and stuff like that, you run into an issue.
Well, it's also, there's always back and forth whether or not people want to game with wireless keyboards or not. What's the pricing on the laptop?
$120.
Okay.
Laptop's $120. So it's kind of expensive.
But once you've dropped like $170 on a keyboard and $70 on a mouse.
Yes. I mean, in terms of the way high-end accessories work today, it's not... not out of line. I could see, you know, if it were $99, I think it's a much easier sell. Anytime you get over the triple digit mark,
right.
you start to, people just have to put different questions in it. I really like it. If you're a person that is gaming on your TV and you're hunched over a coffee table, or you have a piece of plywood sitting on your lap or whatever it is,
right.
This is a pretty good alternative.
There you have it.
Yeah.
We should take a moment to thank our friends over at iFixit.com, iFixit.com/twit, entering the code TWICH. We want to thank them for the support of the show. I was just using, actually, what have I used my ProTech toolkit for in the last week? I have not fixed a toilet with it, but I've done that in the past.
Okay.
Have broken any phones recently. Oh, they tightened up the screws on someone else's phone.
Okay.
Petalope drivers are in there. Yeah. I also actually fixed a knife, one of my pocket knives, and a couple of children's toys.
I'm going to be on that path soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy glue is your friend. iFixit. If you haven't been there, and I don't know why, iFixit.com, it's your complete DIY electronics repair solution. 19,000 free step-by-step repair guys and a huge inventory of replacement parts and tools with lifetime warranty. You know what lifetime warranty means? It means they stand by their gear. iFixit has got your repair need covers, and their step-by-step repair guides are amazing. Today, though, you heard me mention it, the all-new ProTech Toolkit. It's gorgeous. It's a beautiful tool roll, just as rugged as portable as before, but easier to use because it's easier to get to the tools. Best part, the 64-bit driver kit. That replaces the former 54-bit driver kit. And if you can do math, which I can almost do, that means 10 more bits. But that's not even the cool part. It's a better case. It's easier to get into. It's got a magnetic lid on there. And actually, the magnetic kit itself, the 64-bit kit itself, is held onto the roll using magnets, which means you can pull the bit holder off of the tool roll and set all of your screws down on the magnet in the tool roll, which I've been doing a lot. Really nice swivel top precision driver. Fantastic high quality bits are inside of there. A flex extension to get those, you know, terrible screws that are buried like behind a card on the motherboard or underneath the edge of the case. I hate those. That's the whole array of tools you're looking at there right now. It's pretty awesome. ESD safe tweezers, a suction cup to help pull the displays off of phones without breaking them, a ton of plastic opening tools and picks, a metal spudger, iFixit's rubber handled Jimmy pry tool, which is really nice. It's essentially an incredibly thin piece of stainless steel with a big plastic handle you can hold on to. And that's the 64-bit driver kit in monolithic mode right there. Look, kids, you got a place to put your screws. It's good.
It's a good video.
And if you want to get... Yeah, see? That's what I've been doing right there on that magnetic roll. And they actually even have an ESD safety strap if you want to, you know, strap yourself in, attach that to your project, and keep yourself from zapping it into submission. That's great if you're in the cold parts of the country and wearing leather shoes. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Backed by iFixit's lifetime warranty. Buy it because it's awesome or don't. You still get free access to all the free repair resources on iFixit.com. But if you buy it, you not only get a great set of useful tools, you help support iFixit so they can keep adding. Soon it's going to be 20,000. Then who knows how many tens of thousands of free step-by-step repair guides. They keep adding to them. They're pretty awesome. Do yourself a favor, grab an all-new ProTech toolkit and get going on your next fix, hack, or build. Just head over to ifixit.com/twit and use the code TWICH. That's ifixit.com/twit and use the code TWITCH at checkout to save $5 on your purchase of $10 or more. We want to thank iFixit for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware.
We definitely do.
Oh, my goodness.
Let's see. What else happened in the world of hardware this week? We talked about processors kind of coming out in the January timeline.
Well, actually, so I was really curious. You guys were talking about GTX 1080 and 1070 three-way, four-way SLI. Definitely not going to be enabled for games. Does this matter to anybody outside of an incredibly small group of people who actually have $2,400 for GPUs?
It shouldn't, right? So when NVIDIA announced the GTX 1080, they said, okay, we're only going to really push and support two-way SLI. If you want to do three- or four-way, we're going to allow you to do it, but you have to go through this process to enable it, right? It's not just download the driver and install it. It's called an enthusiast key. It was really dumb, to be honest with you. It was their way of kind of...
Don't hold back, Ryan.
It was their way of kind of like making you have to go through an extra step to do it, so maybe you wouldn't actually do it, but also not just cutting it off. So I actually had 1480s in. I was trying to go in and do this whole, let's figure this out. And I started emailing them. Okay, where's the key? How do I get this key? I want to do this stuff. And they said, give us a day. There might be some changes. And the changes are there's no more enthusiast key. It's great. Just download a driver, and it's going to operate. Now, the problem is they're only going to allow 3- and 4-way GTX 10 series, 1080 and 1070, to work on very specific applications. 3DMark, Unigine Heaven, Catzilla, and whatever other kind of benchmark overclocking tools that people have. So even if you had a case where, 3- and 4-way SLI just happened to work in a DX11 game already, that won't work with the GTX 1080 or 1070 anymore. So they're essentially... We're going back a little bit and saying before we said we were going to allow 3- and 4-way. Now we're not going to allow 3- and 4-way. So there's that. But it's a very small group of people that it affects, honestly. But you know, I saw some comments from people that actually kind of made sense. Like, also think of like the motherboards that are built to support 4-way SLI specifically. The cases, the power supplies, 1500-watt power supplies, that type of thing are built because of the idea of 4-way SLI and crossfire being
a thing. The idea that very few people actually use in the real
world. Yeah. So it will have some kind of waterfall, I think, on things. I also, the more I sit on the idea of we're going to enable 3-way and 4-way SLI for benchmarks for like 3DMark because we don't want our GeForce brand to come off of the leaderboards, right? Mm-hmm. You know? Feels a little crappy to me. Because why do we run benchmarks? Why do benchmarks exist?
Because we're trying to look for meaningful ways to evaluate products in the pursuit of a superior gaming experience.
And you would want the benchmarks to at least in some way approximate what a user would get.
Wow, if I buy these four cards and tie them together, I'll get the fastest performance available on the planet in my multiple 4K monitor array. Wait a minute, I just spent $3,000 on hardware and motherboards and power supplies, and I can't actually use it with a real video game.
Exactly.
Gadzooks.
So the idea that we're going to enable it for this subset at first sounded, okay, fine, it makes sense. It still makes sense from a business standpoint. But in terms of teaching the community about something and kind of saying, hey, really only 2-way, blah, blah, blah.
It's really irritating.
It seems dumb. I should point out that if a game developer uses DX12 and they use an MDA-based method for it, which is they're accessing the GPUs directly and not depending on NVIDIA to balance stuff, you can still have 1480s in your system.
I'm sure there's a lot of
1080s in your system.
A lot of developers are going to be spending the time to get that right.
Probably not. Right? That's the issue, right? So I think it makes sense. Like, I would never encourage anybody to get more than two GPUs. And most of the time, I don't even encourage people to get two GPUs. It's too many questions.
Especially if you want VR.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So, and actually, I'd say especially for VR at this point. But
probably.
So that's kind of our current status of GTX 1080, 1070.
I thought this was fascinating. There's a new motherboard by Colorful, which includes a GTX 1070 graphics on the motherboard. Is this actually going to ship, or is this one of those things we see a picture of that never actually shows up in the real world? Because look at that, you know, look at that at home. We got some rocking SODIMM slots there right below the CPU slot on the right. And on the left, that looks like a full-blown GTX 1070 kind of layout.
I think this is something you'll never see.
I'm fascinated.
It's so somebody reminded me many years ago at Computex, AMD or ASUS showed a motherboard that had a high-end discrete GPU on the board itself.
Right.
And that never came out. This looks like, if you look at the picture of the board, it actually looks like it's just going to be in an all-in-one system, right? And so it makes perfect sense for that. If you're trying to make a board to sell to MSI to build their next all-in-one gaming rig, suddenly it makes a lot more sense. You've got a socketed processor. You can offer some upgrade capabilities. You've got this integrated GPU in there that's very high performance. It would make more sense if it were on an MXM module. Obviously,
right.
So you have some more upgradability there. But this is clearly made for very specific use cases, for very specific usage models. This is not something I don't think you should expect to find on Newegg or Amazon or something like that, right? So
I like the idea, though.
I mean, if you're building some sort of crazy gaming box, like, isn't the whole point of graphics cards that you have some upgrade path?
It's right? Totally overrated.
And you don't have that on this, so
that's just totally overrated.
Man. Yeah, I know.
Oh my goodness! If you've been watching the whole autonomous self-driving vehicle kind of foo-rah as it rolls out, you know, Larry Page has kind of one-upped that.
Oh.
He has invested, apparently, sources say Larry Page has invested over $100 million in flying car startup Z-Aero and is also backing competing firm Kitty Hawk.
That's a good name. I like that one.
And I love this article on Bloomberg. Welcome to Larry Page's secret flying car factories. They're a staggering as having some friends that are aviators and having dealt with some people that were working in terms of next generation air traffic control. In order to enable lots of smaller planes flying direct rather than giant planes flying, you know what I mean? Kind of the future of aviation.
Right.
I can see a whole lot of issues with flying cars. Because, you know, people here in the Bay Area, I don't know about Kentucky, have difficulty with turn signals and merging. You know, and when you blow a turn signal and emerge simultaneously in the sky, you usually fall out of the sky. So maybe autonomous controls will be necessary.
Don't we still think that autonomous driving should be figured out first before we, like, let's figure out autonomy in two dimensions and then we'll figure it out in three dimensions, right? Doesn't that seem, that would make sense to me.
Yeah.
And I think, I still believe, I guess there's still the idea of speed, but if you get autonomous driving done really well, do you need to autonomously fly? I guess it's just, you can't get across the ocean.
Well, would you rather fly directly or take the long circuitous interstate route from, say, San Francisco to Las Vegas?
Yeah, I always, in my mind, picture autonomous cars driving 400, 300 miles an hour.
Sure.
Right.
Except they're not going to drive that fast.
I want them to.
Well, we all want them to.
If we just get, let's skip this. Let's do the hypertube?
The hypertubes.
Yeah. Hyperloop. Just get that between every major location and then autonomous cars from there.
We should just skip investing in that and go straight to the transporter.
I mean, yes, teleporting is where we should be. And I would, like, if somebody said you could pay $2,000 to fly to Asia or you could pay $3,000 to teleport to Asia, you teleport.
As long as I'm not going to be half fly at the end of it, you know.
Or your head's on backwards or something that like that from Spaceballs. Yeah, that's true.
I've heard a Spaceballs reference in forever. I just brought that up because I thought it was fascinating. And also the fact that Larry Page basically funded Z-Aero from the ground up. And wanted his involvement kept secret. So,
well, too bad for that.
There's also a $1,000 self-driving car kit. The Verge has a good review of that where they went out and drove it. It's not quite ready for prime time as one would expect from a $1,000 retrofitting your car with autonomy. But it also suggests that the ability to create autonomous vehicles is a lot closer than I think a lot of people realize. But, on the road with George Hotz's $1,000 self-driving car kit. It's pretty crazy. There are some things it doesn't do very well. I suggest you go read the Verge article to learn more about that. Nest is not for sale, by the way. Nest, I think, is in trouble. They just swapped out for a new CEO.
Right,
and I'm only bringing this up because it was interesting because a friend of mine asked in an email thread with a group of us, man, should I, you know, the guy that's doing the AV installation for the house they're building, it's really hitting them up on Control 4. And if you've never heard of Control 4, it's essentially a very high-end, professionally installed system that kind of started out with AV controls, but now is hooked into the sort of all the Internet of Things in your house. Mm. And it's been interesting that, so Nest, which was, you know, kind of completely, it's depending on which version of the article you read, it's like Nest was either not a part of Google Home, flanked by Google Home, or is not competing with Google Home, or they're all really happy with each other, and Nest is just kind of doing its own thing over here. But I'm you know, the big rumor there that was heading out was like the CEO has changed and Nest might be up for sale, and now that they've equivocally stated that Nest is not up for sale. But I think it's frustrating for anybody, myself included, who is investing in any kind of Internet of Things, is the support and sort of longevity of any of these products, or, you know, how well the products continue to be supported after they ship, or whether or not the ecosystem is actually going to develop, which brings us back to sort of, you know, cell phone accessories and other things.
It's almost unthinkable to me that Nest would not have become that.
Yeah.
As ubiquitous as they were, like the first big brand and the one that people bought, and at least from my point of view, people like
they were not the first. They were the first big brand, but Ecobee was out before them, and I think had a superior product at the time, not as stylish, but Ecobee's caught up, and I think is passing them in feature steps for thermometers and stuff.
Yeah, and it's like I had hopes that when they were bought, that there'd be, oh, this is perfect. This is when Google wants to bring out all these different devices, and they didn't. I have the Nest thermostat, and I have the smoke alarm.
Really?
CO2.
I was, after my experience with the Nest thermostat, there was no way I was using their smoke alarms.
I will say that so far, the Nest smoke alarms definitely err on the side of false positives. Because I've been notified that my my office is burning down several times, when in fact I go check the camera, also Nest device, and I look at it and everything looks nice and fine, and I stare at it looking for smoke in one of the corners of the room. And
well, the drop cam, if you have not read the sort of articles by the former drop cam founder discussing his relationship with Nest after being purchased, that's a fascinating read. But you know, my theory was is if the Nest thermometer technology is going to turn off the heat in my house because nobody's home, despite the fact that my wife and two highly mobile children are in the room with the thermometer, I had some concerns about its ability to detect smoke.
That's fair.
And
there's a slight level of importance on fire smoke detection, so, and CO2 detection.
You know,
CO detection.
It's interesting. You know, the thing about spending the money for Control 4, and it adds up really quickly because it's semi-proprietary hardware. There is no user installable features on there. It all has to be done by a professional. The upside is that Control 4, you know, has revenue, and as far as we know, will continue to be around for quite some time. And the, you know, and so if you roll your own or invest in a Kickstarter or anything else, you know, you're rolling the dice to see whether or not it is it A, ever does what it promises to do, and B, is supported.
It's a very I bet five times I've been approached about, hey, we want you to look at our automation technology, and it's like some company that has created a new brand, you know, to kind of go out and do their own thing to try to capture some of that market.
So this is how we're really going to take over the market.
Yeah.
You know, it's always there. This is how we're going to take over the market. So I don't know. Android Marshmallow adoption has passed 10% after 8 months.
That's better than we have seen in the past.
You know, at this point, I'm just pointing it out that as much as, for example, you know, the Moto G, fantastic phone, but it's frustrating. We heard some rumors that you know, Google/Android is starting to push harder to force carriers to either, you know, unleash the updates or put some kind of cap on the amount of time they can spend on the updates, or because they just have this huge install base of phones that is not getting upgrades and probably never will get upgrades. And that's incredibly frustrating as a user. It's incredibly frustrating as a developer. And it's also incredibly frustrating in the security world because there are so many unpatched phones out there and so many interesting and exciting flaws showing up here and there. So
I mean, 10% is an improvement, but not good enough.
It's 10% of all Android install base is a lot of phones. But it's true. It's still, you know, it's not even like, you know, a career in baseball is three successes out of every 10 tries. You know, we're not even up to a good, you know.
That's right. We're batting 100.
100.
But not 100%.
Not 100%.
No. No.
Well, hopefully we're batting 100%. I want to thank Lenovo for letting us use their bandwidth so we could record this.
Thank our caterers next door as well for the...
That was some crazy
noise.
The crashing bottles.
There was a lot of crashing behind us. That's right.
Hopefully,
and I didn't. I never pulled this fire alarm.
Yeah, keep away from that.
Sitting here in the shot the whole time, I just.
You know what's worse than prison? Prison in San Francisco. You know why?
You go to jail for that? Really?
Well, as far as I'm concerned,
just like a fine or something. In California, is that the state where you can just pay the cops directly?
I don't know. That's so many bad places to go. Just don't touch the fire alarm, okay?
All right.
Don't be that guy.
Okay.
Don't be that guy.
Right.
Oh, my goodness. PCPro.com is the place to find all of Mr. Ryan Shrout's epic and amazing benchmarking. Oh, I almost forgot. The Intel 750 is now shipping an M.2 adapter with the 750 series SSDs.
Yeah, the Intel SSD 750 series, it comes in a PCI Express.
Right.
Version or a 2.5-inch version that uses the U.2 connector. Well, the U.2 connector is on some motherboards.
I've got a motherboard with a U.2 connector.
Okay.
I'm the guy.
Not a lot of them.
No.
But a lot more have M.2, so they basically started shipping it with an M.2 to U.2 adapter.
Can you run NVMe over both M.2 and U.2, or is it only U.2?
No. M.2, it has a PCI Express interface. Yeah. So it performs and should act identical.
Okay.
It's just basically getting people to a new form factor. They're not shipping yet, and it's an odd thing. Like, there's going to be a different SKU, and it's probably going to have two letters different in the part. So you have to be careful, I guess, which one you look for.
And it'll probably still be the wrong picture on Amazon.com.
Inevitably, yes. Or they'll have pictures of both in each listing.
Yeah. As always, you can find Alan Malventano's writing on storage and benchmarking, his benchmark creating at PCPro.com. Mm-hmm. More news to come. Hopefully, we'll be reviewing the phones both on TechThing and PCPer, the new Moto phones and the new Lenovo phones. And wow, a lot of hardware coming out in the next few weeks. No CPUs, but a lot of other hardware.
Right. Yeah, I've got plenty to do. That's fine. I can hold on the CPUs for a little bit.
I have the Pocket Chip, the $9 PC, the Pocket
Chip. I'm excited. I saw that.
And the HDMI adapter is here.
All right.
I hate composite video. That's all I'm going to say. Hey, you can get more of me at techthing.com or avxl.com. That's the podcast I host with Robert Herron, where we geek out about home theater and our projector obsession, my projector obsession. You got a projector in your future right here?
I would like to. I think that will be my next screen purchase. I do. I'm either going to put it in the house, put it in the new office.
You bought a church.
I bought a church. So... It may have a giant wall that needs a projector. I don't know. We'll see.
I sense awesomeness.
Yeah.
Giant screen gaming. With that, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Twitch This Week in Computer Hardware. You can find all of our episodes at twit.tv/Twitch and all the information you need to subscribe to the show. You can reach us at Ryan Shrout or at Patrick Norton on the Twitters. And hey, thank you all for listening and watching. And that's it for this episode. I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Ryan Shrout.
We'll see you next week on Twitch.